Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Drunk Women will be downing Prosecco at this year's Edinburgh Fringe. You can see them from the 3rd to the 11th of August inclusive, 7:20pm at the Underbelly, Bristow Square. Tickets are now on sale at underbellyedinburgh.co.uk.
Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Drunk Women.
Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Drunk women.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
This is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Hannah George and I'm a screenwriter. I'm joined by author and comedian Katie Wilkins.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where absinthe meets arson, Negroni meets necrophilia, and Grand Marnier meets Grand Theft Auto. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Long-term relationships are all about bubbling arguments and really low standards.
I love it.
But the ghost ever come back and go, thank you.
Cliff Richard once thought my little brother was a ghost. He wanted seven wives and six.
Is he from
him.
St. Ives?
No, that's so bad.
Yeah, it was.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Yes, hello and welcome to Drunk Women Solving Crime. Today we are welcoming our amazing guest, journalist, author and broadcaster, it's Miranda Sawyer.
Yay!
Ooh, got me!
Thank you for being with us, Miranda.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Now, tell us, we've one question for you.
Oh, God.
Have you ever been the victim of a crime?
I have. I've actually solved a crime.
Ooh!
I know, I was so happy to be asked. I was like, I've solved a crime. Made for me. I have solved a crime. So it was quite a long time ago. It was about, I don't know, 99, 2000 or something. And when I was younger, I used to be quite into old, stupid cars, right? And I had various kind of succession of old, stupid cars. I had a taxi. I would recommend, except it was, I mean, they're old. So the one I had was old. And it goes very, very slowly and quite rattly. But in terms of, you can sleep in the back and everybody likes you.
God.
And make loads of friends. That's great. Yeah. And then I had a series of quite old cars and they were Peugeots. And I had a Peugeot 304, which is very pretty. And then I had a Peugeot 504, which is a really pretty car. It's a convertible.
Okay. Ooh, yeah.
And it was designed by this bloke called Pininfarina. And it looks really gorgeous. And you feel like you're kind of driving around the south of France, even though you're driving around Brixton.
Yeah.
And it's really gorgeous, right? So I had this car and it cost me £5,000, which is a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
And I went on various kind of adventures with it. It was pretty useless. So it was really hard to start, but I had the technique. And I drove around France in it, and I would do things like I knew I couldn't kind of stop because if I stopped it would cut out and then you couldn't start again. I would like slow down by changing gears and like, you know, I mean, like mad things out. So I knew this car really well, but it was a pain in the butt. So, but I loved it very dearly. And anyway, I then in, it must have been 1999, 2000, I just met the bloke who is now my husband and we decided we were going to go on holiday and I bought a different car. I was completely bonkers about cars. And I bought a BMW 3 Series convertible and that was reliable. So we went on holiday in that, right? And we left the other car outside my house in Brixton. And that was, you know, fine. And then while we were on holiday, I got a phone call from somebody who walks past my house quite a lot and said, your car's gone. And I went, right, okay. And he was just like a concerned neighbour who'd phoned my agent and then, you know, found me. And I went, right, okay, fine. So then I asked a mate to go round and he said, yeah, it's definitely gone. I got back and I registered it as missing, but I kept hearing it was around. So because it was so distinctive, this car, it's like turquoise,
car to steal.
That people will say to me, I've seen your car, it's in Camberwell, I've seen your car. It's really annoying, like really annoying. So
where's Peugeot?
Yeah, exactly.
And a popular children's book.
And I'd gone to the police and I'd, you know, register it as gone, and I still had all the papers. So they then they investigate and they found, I can't remember how it happened, but they found that it, they just said, look, we can't do anything. I know what they said. They said, we can't do anything, you have to get in touch with the the agency that gives you out the licenses, and you have to get in touch with them and say, look, it's my car and somebody else has got it. So I did that and it's like nothing. I mean, nothing happened. Nothing happened. It's really annoying.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just gone. Right. So then it was a time
I can't believe they can just turn that into paperwork, like Grand Theft Auto. Fill out some paperwork.
Yeah, it's so like really
not even
irritating.
Their paperwork, your paperwork.
Yeah, yeah, really annoying. So nothing happened, and I had no car, and it was really like annoying because I really loved my car.
Yeah.
And so then I don't know if you remember, there's a period of time when there's quite a lot of kind of tube strikes, and they were just striking for any whatever reason, and I need to go to Manchester in the morning, so I knew that I couldn't get there on time. So I stayed with my brother and he lived at the time in Islington. So went to Islington, going to stay there, blah, blah, blah. Went out, got a pit pissed with my then boyfriend and his mate. And honestly, we were in a cab going back and I saw my effing car.
Shut up.
Wow. And my car was there and a bloke was getting out of my car.
Shut up.
Right?
Wow. Was it your brother?
No. So we stopped and we got out and
this
I got
is
two
amazing.
Very pissed blokes, one of whom was quite big. And they went, I went, that's my car. And they got the bloke and they put him up against the wall and said, that's not.
God.
This is not your car, this is her car, right?
Wow.
It's so weird.
I love this.
So weird.
What are the odds of this?
I know,
it's incredible.
The odds are so odd. And so I went, like, what are you doing with my car? And he had this story. He said, my uncle sold it to me, you know, he had a story about it. And I said, it's my car, right? And so we called the police. The police turned up, like, it's so funny. The police turned up, like, 9 strong. They were really bored, like I don't know what. Turn up 9 strong, and they
were
said,
just like, "We can't believe she just spotted it. Let's all go."
Exactly. So they turn up. I explain the whole thing. They're kind of a bit weird about it, and they said, "Well, he's got the keys. It's his car." And I'm going, "It's my car. Like it's my car."
That's not how anything works, especially
that is
the law.
Policing.
They were really rubbish. I can't tell you. They were absolutely.
You know what?
Rubbish.
He's holding the wallet.
Yeah.
So
he was rubbish. But what they made him do was give me a name, an address, and all this kind of stuff. You know, so I got the name and the address of this guy, and they said, well, he's got the keys, you know. And you know what was, like, he got in the car, and of course he couldn't start it, could he?
Oh,
I could
God.
Start it. So I'm like, I can start that car. I'll show you I can start that car. He can't start it.
God,
I start
amazing.
The car,
this
and they're cinematic. Still like, yeah, well, he's got the... Right.
Even after you started it,
yeah.
And he couldn't. So you like started his getaway vehicle.
Yes. It was like unbelievable. So I was really, you know, as you can imagine, quite hacked off about it.
Yeah,
I
yes.
then they say you've got to go back to the police. I go back to the police. I re-report it. I say, I know the name of the bloke. I know where he lives. He's got my car, right? And they said, I remember this bloke said, possession is 9/10 of the law, right? And I remember being, I know, can you imagine? And I was so cross that I picked up his hat and I took it and I said, oh, fucking wanker. It's mine now, isn't it? So anyway, that didn't work. So I was really across. So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll take him to the small claims court, right? Because I've still got all the, I've still got all the stuff. Right, I've got all the info. So I took him to the small claims court.
Brilliant.
I'm going to sound nothing if not dedicated. I was like, right, I'm taking him to the small claims court. I take him to the small claims court. He turns up without the car. I win, right? Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously I win. And he's like, well, my, you know, I got it off my uncle. My uncle sold it to me. I paid money for it. It's a really tricky car to maintain. And I went, I know. And he was like, I spent all this money on it. And I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
That's my car.
And
so they award it to me. Right?
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
But what, like, he's got no paperwork to show. He's got no receipt. He's got no papers. No. So
he's got nothing.
Like, anyway, sorry. Continue.
So I know. So, yeah. So there was an element that I felt a bit sorry for him. So I said, right, I'll pay the expenses of the court case, but you owe me the car.
Okay.
So he's like, okay.
Yes, your uncle's a thief.
Yeah, exactly.
Your uncle, quote unquote.
Yeah, exactly. So then he, so I win. So then he has to give me the car. And he says, I haven't got the car with me.
Because I can't start it.
Yeah, I'll be in touch, right? So, of course, he goes, I don't hear from him. I'm so innocent all the way through. I'm like, oh. But I have various kind of addresses. So I have an address in Camberwell. I have one in Mitcham. And I have, he said, oh, I took it for work to get done on it in these arches in Camberwell.
Yeah.
And I knew where those arches were, right? So that's it.
You
so,
love this car.
Yeah.
So I go to the arches, right? And I'm like, I've lost my car. Somebody took it. This is what it looks like. It's really distinctive. And I go along every single kind of little dodgy garage along there. And they all go, no. Not heard of, not heard from it. Until this one guy who's under a car says, I'm a raster, I cannot lie. Right?
Wow.
Which is amazing because his boss had just told him he'd never see, told me he'd never seen it.
Wow.
And he said that car was in this garage last week.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
I know. So I looked at the boss and he went, I forgot, you know, whatever. And I said, but still the car's not there. So I'm still like, okay, well, you need to what we need to do about this is my number. If the car turns up, let me know, because this car that you are working on is a stolen car, just so you know.
Yeah.
Right? So then I don't hear anything and I'm really gutted because I'm like, I solved my crime.
Yeah.
I found the blow. I got everything. I did everything. And then I got another phone call. Again, I was away. And there's a place in Brixton on Cold Harbour Lane and it's known as the Barrier Block. It's just like a big, it's a big estate.
Okay.
And all the windows kind of face in on the estate, so the back of it goes onto Cold Harbour Lane. It looks grim and it's called the Barrier Block because it looks like a big barrier. And there was a garage there, and this friend of mine phoned up and said, I've seen your car. And I was like, what? And he said, it's outside the garage on the Barrier Block. So I then meet him there, and the car had been, I mean, it was the car, but the car had been just kind of wrecked. So he'd stuck knives in it. He'd put wood in the engine. He'd like,
what a prick.
I know. Oh, he turned like he'd messed up the ignition and stuff like that. But the really weird thing was, so I'm a bit like, I'm still quite innocent, like, oh, it's my car, you know what I'm gonna. And my friend, who was less innocent, said, I can hotwire it for you. I'm like, oh, can you? Thanks very much. And so he hotwired it. We got it back to my house,
wow,
where I then got it kind of mended.
Oh, wow.
And got it sold on. So there you go. I sold my
car. Wow.
I sold my car.
You really did.
I can't believe. Yeah, with no help from anyone.
No, it was. I was so annoyed by it about it.
That is such a frustrating. Yeah.
Why was everyone so useless? And
because
why?
they don't want to get, you know, I know it's kind of, you know, sound like I'm a Daily Mail reader, no, but the police never want to get involved. But they don't really, because it's like, they don't care.
But
you know, they don't care. You know, so somebody stole your car. There you go.
But like, you did all their work for them. All they had to do is take the glory.
Yeah, literally. I said, this is the blame of the bloke. This is where he lives.
That's insane.
I know.
Why is
he still got a hat? Or did...
No, that I had to get a hat.
One thing we ask on this podcast is if the perp like was in this room right now, if the guy that wrecked your car and didn't give it back was in here, what would you say to him?
Okay, so there's a really awful coda to this crime, which is the bloke then went to jail for murdering his girlfriend.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
shit.
So that was nice. And so they and the
oh,
no, and the police got in touch with me because he did it very soon after the He'd been in the court case, caught with the car.
Wow.
Oh my God.
So, yeah,
Jesus.
I know. So he, as far as I know, although it happened a bit ago, he may be out now. So I imagine he went down for life, did 15 years, came out after 10. So he's out. So basically, I never want to see him. Yeah. ever again.
Okay.
Car, no car, nothing. He can sod off.
Wow. That is fair.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Shit, I did not see that coming.
No, me neither. So what I would say, I mean, the weird thing about it, what I would say about all of it is, it's a really weird thing to solve your own crime because it's quite heady. You know, you want to do it and you kind of feel like, and you feel,
oh, we know.
Yeah,
Miranda.
Exactly. And you know, I am immensely fond of mysteries and I grew up reading James Bond and Raymond Chandler and Mickey Spillane and, you know, and PI kind of work.
Yeah.
I just was obsessed with it when I was a kid. So there's part of me that thinks, I would be brilliant at this.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a great person at solving crime. And I think you can do it if you're really, really dedicated.
Yeah.
However, I do think that sometimes there's kind of unintended consequences that you know nothing about because I'm essentially quite innocent. I know lots of nice people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not very, you know, I'm streetwise because I live in Brixton, but I'm not streetwise.
Right.
So you don't, and I just approach everybody thinking everyone's kind of on my wavelength.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes you don't know how difficult people's lives are, what they're kind of going through, what kind of long-term drug habits they've got, what kind of abuse they're suffering. So you don't really know, and you're kind of solving the crime, you can tip them over the edge. Like, and you don't know. That's the only thing I would say about it.
No,
if you follow it all the way through, you can kind of set something else off in motion that you don't, that you know nothing about really.
Yeah, that's really a really interesting point, actually.
Yeah, it's quite odd because also what I found I did was I slightly started questioning my judgment because when I met the bloke who ended up killing his girlfriend, I just thought he was quite weak. Because when he was confronted with two drunk blokes to put him up against the wall, he didn't kind of offer any resistance.
Right.
But that's a different situation from somebody who's cracked off her head and, you know, in a different situation.
Yeah.
So I just think it made me feel slightly weird about judging my judgment of people.
Right.
You just can't. You can't.
Quite confronting.
It's like, but you know that's true in life, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can assume. I'd far rather assume that everyone's nice.
Yeah.
I do assume that everyone's nice.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, we are all nice. Mm. But, you know, you can just get it wrong, really.
Yeah, that's chilling.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Well,
solved my crime.
Yes.
And it all went wrong.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Well, talking of chilling, we're going to get into our true crime now.
Ooh.
And this is an interesting one. This is the story of the Greenbrier ghost.
Ooh.
So we've got a little bit of paranormal here. And it's the only case in history in which the word of a ghost has helped to solve a crime and convict a murderer.
Whoa.
Oh, this is
okay.
I'm on board.
I mean, to be fair, that is kind of like the clickbait title for this, for this particular story. But it is very interesting. But first things first, has anyone ever seen a ghost?
I haven't seen one.
Okay.
Can I preface this by saying I'm the most cynical person about this thing? Because, you know, there's always somebody that, yes, I've seen many, many. I'm so cynical, but I had a very creepy experience that I cannot explain. So my daughter was about 1.5 at the time, 1.5, 2. And we had a big window in the flat we were living in. So it was always really bright. In our bedroom. Look out, I'm so freaked out just telling this story. It was really bright.
Hands on the table.
Seriously. There was a street lamp, so it was just always really bright, so I could always, you know, see things. And I remember just not being able to sleep, and I kind of bolted awake because I heard that really distinct sound of, you know, the doorknobs that you push down. Mm. That sound of if somebody just lets it go and it's like click.
Oh, yeah.
So I was sort of like, oh. And I saw our bedroom door just swing open.
Ooh.
Now, that alone wasn't crazy because, you know, we get drafts.
Sure.
It was summertime with windows open and all of that. So I was like, oh, okay, that's funny. Well, I'll go check it out and see if there's a window open. Maybe I'll shut it. And when I stood up, I noticed that even though I absolutely 100% saw the door swing open, there was this small handbag that I'd given to my daughter to play with. So it was full of toys.
Okay.
And it was now propping the door open.
Ooh.
So I was like, oh, this is creepy. This is really weird.
And
I can't explain
daughter?
That. So she's asleep in another bedroom down the hallway. No.
Okay.
That was my first thought. I was like, come on, kid. This is not funny. We've been sleep training. This is not what you learned. So my first instinct was, we'll go check the door and make sure that no one has broken in. And it was silent. So I turn right out of the bedroom and I go to the door. It's locked. It's deadbolted. There's no signs of entry or anything. So I turn, because my next thought is, we'll go check on your daughter. I could see that her door was shut. I'd look down the other way, but when I turned around to walk back down the hallway, she had this box of Lego.
Yeah.
And it was right in the middle of the hallway, standing up on end.
What? Oh,
and there is absolutely no way that it was there before when I turned to go check through. Oh my God, I'm goosebumps. I hate this story because I can't explain it. I'm like, I like science. I can't explain this.
That's freaky.
But what was really weird is I feel more creeped out telling it now than I felt in the moment. I was just like, oh, if this is a ghost, he's kind of a son of a bitch. Really messing with me. And I went and checked on her. She was sound asleep. And I like picked up the box. I'm like, don't you go on your side again. And I sort of took a while to fall asleep, but fell asleep. And that was that.
Wow.
But it was just the weirdest.
That's crazy. That's a poltergeist, isn't it?
Aye.
Lego Poltergeist.
It felt
really creepy.
I love the film Poltergeist.
That's what when I saw Poltergeist, I was like 17 or something, and we all went as a crew, and we all sat as in the row, and I was so scared that when it finished, this kind of older couple turned around to me and said, "Are you okay?" Obviously, out of everyone in the whole cinema, I'd be screaming so badly.
You got the most out of that film.
Yeah, I got my money's worth. That's really creepy. Your story is creepy.
My only ghost story is that Cliff Richard once thought my little brother was a ghost. Which is a weird old sentence. But my uncle used to own a hotel on the Isle of Wight, and children weren't allowed, and Cliff Richard stayed at his hotel. And then me and my brother would go up and see our nana upstairs. And then as we walked back down, Cliff Richard apparently had glanced at my brother and just gone, "What the fuck was that?"
Amazing. Yeah. You should have been employed to do that. That's so brilliant.
Yeah. Apparently he said to my...
Well, now I understand. I thought he was just like really malnourished or something.
He said to my uncle later, he was like, "I thought I saw a ghost, but then I saw his Nike trainers." And ghosts are always Victorian children, aren't they?
Always, yeah.
Right, okay. So allegedly, a ghost of a young woman appeared at the end of her mother's bed and told her she'd been murdered and not died of natural causes, which is what had been recorded.
Oh my God.
So when do you think this happened in history, that people were taking this testimony seriously?
Early 1900s.
Yeah. Okay,
that's a good guess.
They loved a ghost then, didn't they?
Yeah, like medicine had moved on. They probably, coroners had a job to do. They could tell more stuff. I'm going to go 1910.
I was going to go slightly earlier, just like 1880s.
It's 1897. Yay. Everyone was in a good...
Everyone was right.
So this happened in Greenbrier County, West Virginia in the States. So Elva Zona Hester, the murder victim, was born in Greenbrier County sometime around 1873.
So how old is she at her death, sorry?
23 years later. So she's 23 years.
Oh, so she's an adult when she's killed.
She's an adult when she's killed, yeah. Zona met...
You were picturing cute little ghosts, and now it's like...
I was picturing a 10-year-old.
I should have prefaced it with like... I mean, it's still sad she is a 23-year-old woman. Met a drifter, and this is a very solid name. His name is Erasmus Stribling Trout Shrew.
Of course it is.
It's a big old name, isn't it? So he's known as Trout, and he had moved.
It's the easiest one to remember.
Might as well.
Can you call me Shoe, guys? No, I'm not Trout.
Erasmus.
Yeah, he moved to Greenbrier County in search of a new life and to work as a blacksmith. Zona met him not long after his arrival in town. The two fell in love and he proposed. Do you think Zona's mum, the one that saw the ghost, Mary Jane, was happy about this?
About a drifter with eight names and none of them are names? No. Yeah,
no. Unless he actually had a trout farm or something.
Yeah.
Did he have hidden trout farm. Drifting. Trout. No. She would not like that.
I love the idea of a travelling trout farm.
That's possibly. Trout farm was at home. He was just, you know, selling his wares.
I'm a trout of dead.
I got trouts in this bucket.
But she was not happy. She had taken an instant dislike to Trout and always felt like he was... I know this name. Always felt like he was hiding something. So the couple lived peacefully for a short time before Zona's body was found in the house. Question, how long do you think they lived peacefully before he murdered her?
Oh, my goodness.
A year?
Well,
it's less than a year.
3 months.
Oh my God, it's 3 months.
Wow.
That's a quick romance, isn't it?
It is.
That's how long
living together is hard.
I was going to say there's usually something that kicks off after 3 months. Not necessarily murder, but it gets,
So yeah, on January 23rd, 1897, Zona's body was found at her home. So who do you think it was found by? Any idea? Do you think that Trout discovered the body
I
himself?
I hope it wasn't his, her mother.
Or do you think that she he was being a bit cleverer?
So they live in the same town as the mum.
Yeah.
So it could be the mum.
Yeah.
But then he could be like, oh, look what I found, like, pretending.
I'm going for the priest.
Oh, the priest.
The priest just came round. Like, they do.
Every good story. I think maybe he discovered it.
I'll say the mum to be different.
Well, as, I mean, we know that this man is a shit, but he sent a young boy on an errand to the house.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so the kid discovered it.
Oh, what a git. I don't like him. You know, I wasn't fond of him before.
Yeah.
I like him now. He's really horrible.
Team Trout before now, but come on.
The boy found Zona lying on the dining room floor, stretched out with her feet together and one hand on her stomach. The boy ran to tell his mother, who summoned the local doctor and coroner, George W. Knapp. Knapp did not arrive for close to an hour. So in the in-between time, Trout comes home. What do you think he did?
Wait a second. The doctor is also the coroner?
Yeah, small town.
Okay.
Man of many talents.
Okay, so the people who were there are the dead woman.
Yeah.
The kid, so presumably no, maybe the kid is left.
Yeah, the kid is left. He's
and we've got like, who's there? His mum.
So no, at the moment at the house, you've got the body, and you've got, and then Trout goes home, and we know that he knows that because he murdered her.
There's nobody else with the body then. Nobody's standing with the body.
No, apart from Trout goes home.
Oh right, okay.
But the coroner is there.
Not yet. He doesn't arrive.
I'm so sorry.
We've got an hour for tampering.
Yeah, so tampering. Right. So what do you think? What do you think he does to make it look like maybe she wasn't murdered?
Oh,
he sits her in a chair.
She's holding a glass of wine. It's just a heart attack.
Well, he didn't pose her with her hand on her stomach because I was thinking if it was poison, maybe he made it look like. Did he put like?
Really bad
a plate
cooking.
Of really bad food.
Trout.
Yeah, like
the bloody
porridge.
Trout.
Rancid
uncooked trout.
Trout
in front of her.
Yes.
By the time the doctor arrived, Trout had carried his wife's body upstairs to the bedroom and laid her out on the bed. He dressed the corpse himself. Why do you think that's unusual at that time for Trout to have done it? Apart from the fact that he's completely tampered with an unexpected death crime scene.
Yeah, yeah. And was that illegal at that time?
To tamper with it.
Yeah, until the coroner got there.
I don't know, I think they were a bit slacker, weren't they?
Right.
Mm.
Why was it unusual at the time for him to dress the body?
Yeah, for him to do it specifically.
Would it have to be a woman?
Yes. Oh. Yeah. Kate's on fire.
Wait, really? Even if it's a spouse?
Yeah. Traditionally, the job of washing and preparing the body for burial.
Tell you what, men can't do anything these days. I can't even dress my dead wife.
But he's preparing her for, like... But that's weird, because... Surely,
like, let's get this buried. We don't
need the coroner. Like we don't need to look. He's like, no, we don't need the coroner. I'll just dress her and she's going to be buried.
Saved everyone a job.
Yeah.
But so wait, just a second though. So did women have to do it to women and men did it to men, or women did it to everybody?
Oh, it's a good question. Probably to everybody. Okay. They do all the work, don't they? Am I right, guys?
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project. There's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
So,
this one gets a bow tie.
Trout dressed her.
Right.
But he dressed her in a high-necked dress with a stiff collar.
Oh.
He's a bloke, though. They haven't got a clue. This girl, this will do. You always like that, don't you?
No, so he's covering
up. He strangled her.
Yeah, maybe. He's placed
it's
a
trout bone.
Trout bone. Is that what it's called?
Trout bone down the throat and he's covering it.
Oh,
That's why I don't eat them.
He also placed a veil over her face. Trout remained by the corpse while Dr. Knapp examined it.
Wow.
He was cradling his wife's head and sobbing. Knapp ascertained the body showed signs of being deceased for far longer than a few hours.
Oh, wow.
But do you think Dr. Knapp was able to do a thorough investigation? Not investigation,
well,
examination.
He couldn't upset the crying man cradling the wife's head, could he? He
couldn't like get a... the head. Get off!
Oh, my God. You know, I've been reading stuff recently about domestic violence, and like basically strangulation is the last thing they do before killing.
Wow.
And it's often of the way of killing it, and a lot of it doesn't even leave marks. So if it's even left marks, that's really terrifying too. But it's literally if a woman's being abused by her husband, strangulation is pretty, like the experts on trying to make this easier to prosecute and get it listed as what it should be. That's if ever anyone is escaped and reporting choking and strangulation, they're like, okay, this is really serious, but the police aren't equipped to.
Wow. No, I mean, in this case as well, nor is Dr. Knapp, because Dr. Knapp, noting the husband's grief, gave the body only a brief examination, and he did note some bruising on her neck, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
When he tried,
he still notes the bruising.
He noticed the bruising.
Okay.
But when he tried to look closer, Trout reacted so violently that Knapp ended the examination and left the house. Like, that is not the doctor you want doing your post-mortem, is it? Or your smear test or anything. Like, you don't... Like,
your smear
test. What do you mean? I'd be like, can you just be thorough? Be thorough, please.
He just wants the path of least resistance.
Yeah, so what do you think Knapp recorded as the cause of death for Zona? And I'll give you a clue. It's pretty sexist.
Really? Oh, God. Hysteria.
It's always hysteria, isn't it? Cramps. Really bad period pain.
Essentially...
Sexist cause of death? I don't know.
Well, it is... It's kind
she
of...
She talked too much.
Overthinking? Yeah.
She's just being too womanish.
Reading? Dizziness?
Yes. The death was listed as everlasting faint.
Oh, my
wow,
God.
Wow, that's amazing. God. That's quite religious.
Also a great 80s album. Wowzers.
I thought you were about to sing there, but you were just
everlasting faint. Sorry.
Later, the cause of death was changed to childbirth, but it is unknown whether she was pregnant or not. That is how unthorough Dr. Knapp was.
Oh, wow.
He was just like, anyone else? I mean, I'm not being funny about it. Even a kid, if they walked in, would know if she'd been giving birth or not. I mean, they might notice.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's utterly insane that there's no...
I just don't get it. Another dead woman anyway. Move on.
Yeah. It's probably actually feasible in that time period, though, that so little was understood that men had not witnessed that. They weren't
but
a part
doctor.
Of that. That they'd be like, childbirth. Mm. No,
oh,
I know.
Were
but...
men not involved? Was it all like women
no,
that
I mean,
were
I don't
births?
Think men were involved with births, weren't they?
Right.
Were...
That was before it got more medicalised.
I've watched Call the Midwife. It was mostly ladies.
I think ladies.
Yeah. So the doctor had been treating her for female trouble for 2 weeks before her death, which could be anything.
So what... Do we know what the doctor thought female trouble was?
Well, we still don't know...
Being female, Katie.
Making a fuss. So the next people to find out was Ona's parents, and when Mary Jane found out, she is reported to have said that devil has killed her.
Yeah.
So Trout has managed to fool the doctor, but what is it about funerals, particularly at that time, and also I think still in America now, that I feel like we don't have this here.
The open
so much.
Casket.
The open casket.
Okay.
Do have it in Ireland.
You have it in Ireland,
yeah,
right?
It's a Catholic thing.
Yeah,
right?
Catholic.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely out.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
In the home.
Yeah.
That is exactly what happens here. Ah. So what do you think Trout is up to? I mean, what do you
well,
think he's
so basically,
up to?
Well, then he's given her a high collared dress, hasn't he? So maybe he's had to redress or somebody's redressed it and they notice the stuff around her neck, you know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they it's taken to the parents' house, the casket, and Trout kept something of a bedside vigil next to it. He didn't let anyone anywhere near. His behaviour began to arouse suspicion. During the wake, his grief changed repeatedly from overwhelming sadness to incredible energy. He allowed no one to come close to the coffin, especially while he was placing a pillow on one side of her head and a rolled up sheet on the other.
Oh
he explained
God.
These additions by saying they would help his wife rest easier.
Ugh,
I know.
Creepy.
So creepy. Trout also tied...
You must be exhausted after your everlasting faint, honey.
Here's a pillow. It's like the lie that you know you can get not challenged on. It's like so obviously a lie, but
it's
anyone that challenges it looks like a cunt.
Yeah.
It's that... It's really... clever, horrible lying.
Yeah, this is literally, this case is just full of people not wanting to say anything, apart from Zona's mum, who we'll hear from in a minute.
Social convention for evil.
Yeah. So when it was time to move the corpse to the cemetery, several people noticed something odd about the body. What do you think it was?
The neck was broken.
Oh my god,
he wanted to stop the neck rolling. That's why he placed all that stuff there to catch it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was actually broken.
I know.
Wow. Because that's why you'd see it, because you don't often see the bruises. Yeah, Jesus.
There was a strange looseness to her head, but as with lots of people in this town, no one really said anything apart from Mary Jane, who was so convinced that her son-in-law had murdered his wife. So after the wake, she removed the sheet from inside the coffin and tried to return it to him, but he refused it. She noticed an odd odour about it, so she washed it. Now, this is where things start to get a bit weird and paranormal. She goes to wash it. She puts it in a basin of water. And what do you think she alleges happens?
A spirit comes out.
You've jumped the gun a little.
Sorry. There's a sign.
There's a stain on it that doesn't come out.
Yes. Oh, my God, you're catching up with Katie. Yes. She said that the water in the basin turned red when she dropped the sheet in.
But it didn't look stained when she put it in.
No, it was just a white sheet. She put it in the water. All of the water turned red, is what she says.
Okay.
The sheet then turned pink and the water cleared. The stain could not be removed, which Mary Jane interpreted as a sign that Zona had been murdered. She began to pray, and every night for up to 4 weeks kept up her prayers, hoping that Zona would return and explain to her what happened.
Wow.
Then what do you think happened?
I mean, I know I shared a ghost story, but I've also done laundry and I'm just not buying this, but okay.
Well, this is,
she has a gut feeling and it's manifesting itself into her superstition.
She has a gut feeling. Definitely.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's manifesting. I think she's playing the game too. She's like, I'm going to do the acceptable lies.
I'm going
to
keep. Yeah. I'm washing and I'm praying.
Yeah,
which is completely
interesting point. Yeah,
yeah, okay. Allowed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So what happens next is apparently Zona appeared to her mother in her bedroom. The ghost appeared first as a bright light, gradually taking form and filling the room with a chill. She said that Trout was a cruel man who abused her and who attacked her in a fit of rage when he believed that she had cooked no meat for dinner. He broke her neck, and to prove this, the ghost turned her head around until it was facing backwards.
Oh my god, that's so horror story. That's so great. That's I love it.
He's creepy, isn't it?
Yeah, he pulled a ghost.
Proper. Woohoo! We're back to really dodgy, schlocky films.
Yeah. I was thinking how much I missed The Haunting of Hill House. That was such a good series, and that's very.
It is very like that, isn't it? Yeah. And apparently she visited her mother over 4 nights. So what do you think Mary Jane did next with this information that she's got?
Wow, she's going to go to the police that won't listen.
Yeah, she videoed it. She took notes, drew a sketch.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Does she go to the police right away or does she need some
allies?
She's
got to go to the priest. Come on, the priest must be involved.
Yeah, I feel like she needs to get the church on her side.
Yeah.
Well, she visited the local prosecutor, so she did go straight to the police, John Alfred Preston, and spent several hours in his office trying to convince him to reopen the matter of her daughter's death. So do you think she managed to convince him? With her ghost story.
Oh, I hope so. Come on.
So, I mean, it depends if he's a religious man too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think not yet.
Okay. They were all religious men, weren't they?
Okay.
Mostly,
well,
I guess. But yes, he did.
Straight off the bat.
Yeah, and whether he believed the story of the ghost is unknown, but he did have enough doubt to dispatch deputies to re-interview several people of interest in the case.
Okay.
Including Dr. Knapp. Apparently...
That really brilliant doctor.
Dr. Knapp.
There's so many terrible doctors in these stories. Yeah. It's just amazing.
So at this point, though, the body's been in the ground for a month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Apparently, also, when I was reading stuff about this, also there was a vibe around town that this guy had definitely... Because I come from a small town, there's always... People. If there's a vibe around town, the police, I think, pick up on it.
I mean, would there have been a vibe, too, that he was abusing her? Or would you think that would have been more hidden?
I think it was only 3 months, wasn't it? So I'm not sure.
Kind of accepted.
That was fine.
Yeah. Just don't murder them. So Preston himself went to speak to Dr. Knapp, who stated that he had not made a complete examination of the body. This was viewed as sufficient justification for an autopsy, and an exhumation was ordered and an inquest jury formed. So how do you think Trout reacts to the news that there's going to be an autopsy?
Brilliantly.
Threw a pie. Woohoo, come around.
He's going to do the whole narcissistic, I'm so upset having a breakdown, kind of make the attention on him again or something.
Or he's going to scarper.
Ooh, yeah.
He might do a runner.
Yeah.
Well, he vigorously complained is the description. And also he wanted to be present at the autopsy.
Right.
So he's
meddling again.
I know. What a fucking idiot.
That looks real bad. And this guy's not playing it very cool anyway.
Can I come in?
Apparently he responded saying that he knew he would be arrested, but that no one would be able to prove his guilt.
Oh, God, he's a horrible psychopath, isn't he? Yeah. He just thinks he's brilliant. Ugh.
The ego on it. The autopsy lasted 3 hours and was conducted at the local school.
Oh, wow.
Oh. Educational. Everyone line up.
During so school funny. Hours.
Yeah. I'd be like, it's closed for voting and autopsies.
Yeah. Kids got the day off. So. Yeah.
Another dead body, off you go.
Yeah. So the autopsy found that Zona's neck had indeed been broken. And the discovery was made that the neck was broken, the windpipe was mashed. On the throat there were marks of fingers indicating that she'd been choked. It's horrible, horrible reading. And on the strength of this evidence and his behaviour following her death, Trout was arrested and charged with the murder of his wife.
Yeah.
So before the trial began, stuff was starting to come to light about Trout's past. Do you think he was married before?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a trail of dead women behind him.
Yeah, or several marriages and just moved on.
Yeah.
Selling his trout.
Yeah.
Well, there was a little bit of both because he'd apparently been married twice before. His first marriage ended in divorce with his wife accusing him of great cruelty.
Yeah,
his second wife died under mysterious circumstances.
Oh,
yeah, less than a year after they were married. And this is slightly odd. Apparently in jail, Trout started talking about how many wives he had planned to have over his life.
So funny. He just wants to dispatch him because he's bored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not what you look for in, like, a husband. Wait, how many are you planning? Any guesses how many he thought he would go for across his life?
Oh, my goodness.
22.
That's a lot. Even Trout wasn't that
four? Long.
Ooh, between 10 and 4.
6.
Up.
7.
It was 7. he wanted 7 wives, and he told reporters that he was sure he would be let free and be able to do it because there was so little evidence against him.
Is he from St. Ives?
That's so bad.
Yeah.
So he was convinced that there was so little evidence against him, but he was discounting the ghost. Now, don't get too excited. The ghost doesn't...
Oh, this is so great. The ghost just goes, why are they giving evidence?
Oh, my God.
I do feel a little bit like I've led you up that path, and the ghost does not appear.
Oh, come on.
I know. But, so the trial began.
And now taking the stand.
It began on June 22nd, 1897, and Mary Jane was Preston's star witness. But he confined his questioning to the known facts of the case, skirting around her issue of the ghostly sightings because he didn't want her...
Wait, he was his own lawyer?
No.
The lawyer for him.
Preston is the...
The investigator.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's the prosecution, so he's prosecuting him.
Right.
And so Mary Jane was a star witness, but he didn't want people to think that she was an unreliable witness or crazy. So he's like, let's not really talk about the ghost stuff. What? But who do you think does bring up the ghost stuff?
Oh, he did. The Trout. The Trout brings up the ghost stuff to try and make her look mad.
To discredit her.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, Trout's
lawyer. And then it backfired.
Damn right it did.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, wow, I love it.
I know, it's incredible. So he questioned...
So he is his own lawyer then?
No, Trout does have a lawyer.
A lawyer does it.
You're obsessed with somebody having their own lawyer. Somebody here has their own goddamn lawyer.
I'm just interested into what he would choose to do.
I know, it does seem like the measure.
Yeah, he's like an ego type, isn't
he?
Yeah. Like Ted Bundy.
So he questioned...
Don't go there, it's a terrible town.
He questioned Mary Jane extensively about her daughter's visits on cross-examination.
Okay.
The tactic backfired when Mary Jane would not waver in her account despite intense badgering. As the defence had introduced the issue, the judge found it very difficult to instruct the jury to disregard it, which is what he tried to do, but they wouldn't because many people in the community believed it, including the jurors.
You got a superstitious community. Ghosts are going to get people locked up. Yeah. That's amazing.
Exactly. And apparently she even brought the sheet in as evidence.
Oh, that's so great. The stain that doesn't come out. This is so good.
I don't know whether she popped it over her head for a kind of real ghost vibe. Do you think the jury convicted?
Yes, definitely. We've convicted him.
I want to say but did the judge overrule? No, so they did.
Yes, Trout was found guilty of murder on July 11th. What do you think he was sentenced to?
To be hung.
Okay.
I don't know in those days. I don't know. Do they have life then? I don't know.
Well,
hard labour. Give up your trout.
Yeah.
I think he would have been executed.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with hanging.
Yeah, okay. Hanging. Well, 10 of them voted that he be hanged, but without a unanimous verdict of death, Trout was sentenced to life in prison.
Oh, okay. Which would have been life in prison. Would there have been a parole then?
Yeah, I think so. I think like life meant
they
life.
Did appeals then. Okay. That's a good question. Like, when did appeals, the appeals process start?
But also because life in prison means something different here. So if life in prison now means 15 years. But it's in America, I always think they just think it means life, don't they?
Yeah,
it's much tougher. Like, if you get life, it means life in America, whereas in Britain, it tends to mean 15 years.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, unless it's like really bad.
20 consecutive life sentences.
Oh,
it's all very.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're out in 8 years. So I don't really understand.
But this did not satisfy everyone in Greenbrier County, and a lynch mob assembled.
Oh, no.
Wow. Yeah.
Pitchforks.
Yes. So with between 15 and 30 men who, and I quote, had bought a new rope.
Oh my god!
That's just what he said. Like,
wow.
Well, you don't want to use a smelly old rope.
You don't want to make sure it doesn't break.
Yeah, this
is true.
So they started towards the jail, and a man, again, another great name, George M. Hurrah.
That's so great.
I like him. He's my friend.
So he contacted the sheriff. He'd obviously seen them through his window or something, and he let the sheriff know what was going down. What do you think the sheriff did with this information that a lynch mob is coming towards the jail?
He left the jail and he opened the door and said they could get in.
Oh, no.
Is he not going to start gunning down the mob, is he?
This is way more exciting than what happened. This is
such a does he just stop them?
Well, it's so weird. He took, apparently, Deputy Sheriff Dwyer took Trout to a place of refuge in the woods.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, a mile or so from the town. And then he came back and disbanded the mob and returned them to their homes.
Oh, no, and he escapes.
Well, do you think Trout was there when he went back from
the woods? He didn't tie him to a tree or anything.
he didn't say to the people with the rope, he's over there.
Oh, my God.
He didn't just leave him in the woods.
He was just trusting him in the fucking woods.
That is just unbelievable. Incompetent. I can't believe it.
Do you know what?
Trout. Stay.
Oh my god.
Well, what happened was
although after your story, Miranda, I don't believe anything.
Yeah. Modern police.
And that was the modern day.
Yeah. I read several things about this, and reading about this part, there was never a mention of anyone else. I assume someone else was there, but it was never ever mentioned. It was just he took him to the woods and he was like, I'm just gonna go deal with this.
With another deputy. Yeah.
You'd think so. So Trout was still there. He got taken to prison. How long do you think he spent in prison?
Well, it sounds like it wasn't life because you're asking us.
He died in prison?
Yes, he did.
Oh!
And of grief.
did someone kill him in prison?
Well, you see, again, with all these sort of older cases, I read somewhere that someone killed
years,
him in prison.
But... 10? Did he do 10?
He did 3 years because he died on March 13th, 1900. Any idea how he died? We sort of almost already...
Somebody strangled him.
Yeah, that would be a just end.
What would you have? Typhoid?
Yes. Well, it was an unknown epidemic, which is the joy of living in the 1900s. It could have been anything.
Love the unknown
measles. It could have been anything.
Yes, measles, mumps, or pneumonia.
Smallpox, pneumonia.
That was the three that it could have been.
Okay.
I think it's pneumonia. Pneumonia.
So he was buried in an unmarked grave in the local cemetery. Mary Jane never recounted her story of her daughter's ghost again.
Did the ghost ever come back and go, thank you?
Well, actually, hilariously, one of the sort of things I read for this was on Wikipedia. And at the bottom it said, as for Zona, her ghost was never seen in the area again. Citation needed. Which...
That, I mean, the whole story citation.
So, do you think, like, what is your...
It's like an alternate name for our podcast.
Yeah, citation needed. It could cover so many things.
Just to finish this up, do you think... What do you think? Do you think the ghost... I mean, my instinct was kind of like, if she was making it up to get him kind of like...
In trouble.
To get him sort of like to go down for what he did, then... Great, I'd make up a ghost story.
Yeah,
but maybe she believed it. What are your thoughts?
Do you know what? I don't care if she believed it or not. I think she did what she had to do and she brought a villain to justice.
Mm. Yeah, and also I think it's interesting what you said about the conventions, isn't it? She's playing within the conventions, which is quite good. So, and also I think, you know, if my daughter was murdered by some horrible git, then you would be completely mad with grief and you may well, when people die, you quite often feel... their presence, even though you know they're not there.
Yeah.
And if it's somebody really close to you, I can imagine you would Yeah. Because you wouldn't be sleeping, would you? You'd be just nuts.
It would be so intense with the trauma and everything. Yeah,
so you probably would see her. Yeah. And if you had that great suspicion, then it would just merge. Yeah. So I think the ghost definitely existed, even if just for her.
Yes.
Nice. I like definitely that. Was there.
Perfect way of putting it.
Yeah. Wow. Taylor, anything to add?
Not after that, baby.
And then she went to
Detective
heaven.
Detective Sawyer.
Well,
his Detective Sawyer rounded that out.
His to Mary Jane, everybody.
Yeah, go Mary Jane. Hey, that was fun. Mary I'm glad Jane. The right person won. Drunk women solving
crime. So we got one last section of the podcast, and this is a listener crime. So this was written in our last live show. We asked people to write in. So this is, Dear Drunk Women, my little brother, aged about 10, was obsessed with a book involving a magic 50p that could grant wishes. Somebody spent at least 2 years selling him magic 50p coins for sums of money up to £5. This con artist has never been brought to justice for her crimes. What do we think immediately?
Blatantly her, isn't it?
Yeah.
She did it.
And she's
just confessing because she feels so bad because it's a younger brother. Yeah. And she was charging him a fiver every time she gave him 50p. And she took all his birthday money. And you are really bad. And we don't forgive you. No, no. Take that guilt with you. Sorry.
For shame.
Is this our first confession?
It must be. That is so a confession.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they didn't leave a name, so...
Definitely.
Yeah.
I know. I was an older sister. I know the way the your power. Mind thinks.
I was going to say, there's a bit of leeway with siblings, right? The rules are just different.
Yeah, it's true.
I did think, like, because that was the Queen's Nose, the book. Do you remember the Queen's Nose?
There was a kids' TV show, too.
Yeah.
They made a TV show of it.
They did. I was obsessed.
What did the magic 50p's do? What was the...
You just got a wish. You'd rub the nose, and then you'd wish for something.
Yeah.
And she never really... She always wished for,
like... So it was the Queen. You were rubbing the nose of the Queen.
The Queen's Nose,
yeah. And
I'm sure there's something filthy about that. Yeah. I was rubbing the Queen's nose.
I do think that her punishment should be making sure that she confesses, that, like, brings it up with the brother who hopefully by now has figured it out, that was not a fair deal. But she owes him something.
Yeah, I'm take him for a meal and confess. Because, like, if you work out how much she charged him for all these 50p's, and so there was a five every time.
Yeah.
And then obviously add in inflation, so that would be, like, massive in
big
London
reparations,
prices, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You're going out of this £500 meal.
Inflate, like, bucket
money. Buy him a car. Miranda can help you out.
Well, just before we go, I mean, I think we solved that. You're a terrible person.
Definitely.
Okay.
Terrible person. You just got to be nice and make up for it now. Hmm. And good on, you've made the step in the right direction by confessing.
Before we go, Miranda, what are you up to? What's going on? Where can we find you online? What can what you got coming out?
Oh, yeah, I should plug it. I'm meant to be writing a book, and maybe can people help me? People can help me with that. Do you want to help? It's about long-term relationships, and I have a theory that they only last... long-term relationships last if you have quite low standards.
Ooh, okay.
So I'd like to write a book about that.
Amazing.
So this is my theory. It's a very small theory, but I think it works. That if you lower your standards, your relationship lasts. Because sometimes, you know, I look at other people who split up and I think, they seem fine. They seem to get on better than we do. Like, you know, why are they split up? I don't understand. Yeah, exactly. So if you keep your standards low,
so what, maybe just one of you has to have low standards, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Anyway, so I might, you know, be putting tweets out asking people for, you know, the kind of arguments. The arguments I really like between couples are the ones that just last for a really long time, don't go anywhere. Yeah. So it's a bit like kind of,
really,
you know,
good at those.
Like, I love them because they're kind of the bond that keeps people together. So it's a bit like, you know, you want blinds and, you know, in the windows, and he wants curtains, and then you don't have anything, and you literally don't have anything
in the
on
window.
Your window for like 5 years.
Yeah.
That was a really common one.
Totally.
That was really common. And I know somebody solved that by going to John Lewis and deliberately picking the most ugly pair of curtains that they both thought was really, really ugly and using those.
Oh,
that was the
God.
Only way they could
compromise. Wow.
I know, I love
is
it.
That
those
that's good.
I love those long term. Yeah, really long kind of arguments that just bubble along.
Like, I'm not going to change my mind and you're not going to change your mind. Can we just drop it and have a nice time?
My face.
We've got an ongoing one about a toilet roll holder. Do not bring it up. It's
See, this is my theory. There you go. Long-term relationships are all about bubbling arguments and really low standards.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, buy it when it's out.
I'm buying into that. Yeah.
So,
thanks for coming.
That was so fun. I loved it.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman, with music by The Lion and the Wolf. You can follow us on Twitter at Drunk Women Pod and Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you've got a petty crime you want us to solve, then write it in a review and we'll solve it. Thank you to Acast and thank you for listening.
You've heard the podcast, now buy the merch. There's a full range of certified organic cotton t-shirts, jumpers and hoodies, all on the website. Just go to drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.